I am unashamed. What about you?
Now I'm at the stage sinister. Now where I was the last thing I remember would be being on the couch thinking about going to bed. Now the last thing I remember from last night is pulling in the carport, and I actually ate supper. I have no knowledge. I remember Missy,
it's her duck
mouth
season blackout
was moving, and it's like she kept saying, "Go to bed, go to bed." So I vaguely remember that, but it was foggy. So what we've been doing the last 3 days, and we have a guest, Sloan Brown. You're like the marketing of hunting for Yeti.
Yeah, so we have community marketing and. We started with hunt fish. Now we've got ranch and rodeo, beer and barbecue, music.
Really?
And so, yeah, I focus on the hunting community.
Okay. And somehow that led you here.
You have a cool name. Sloan Brown is a cool name. I mean, there could be a song.
Is that your real name or is that your marketing?
Yeah. That's not my marketing name. Cool.
I didn't know marketers changed their names.
Most of the time it's a girl's name. That's what I get.
But see, really? you came from, like your parents said Sloan Brown. Sloan so that you Brown. Had that marketing gene, because it's like Phil, I've heard the story, what he wanted to name me originally. You know, he let Si name me.
Yeah,
that's a famous story. But he told me one time, he said, "You better be glad Si named you, because I was going to name you Lud." You remember that? When you told me that?
Lud. Yeah. I don't remember.
Lud.
Lud the Dud.
I just thought, Lud.
But Sloan Brown
was like, I think there was a uncle's kinfolk's Lud Childs.
I knew there was a history.
That's the worst name I've ever. Well, no offense to my long lost cousin.
You know, and Missy, that's a touchy subject. And I brought up that point one time. I said, "Well, my dad wanted to name me Lud," and she was like, "Oh, good grief! It's a miracle that you're even alive." So
it just has a ring to it. It could be like a Jim Croce song, you know. Bad, bad Sloan Brown.
Yeah. Hey, I like it. But look, so describe, because look, we've been filming 3 days, and I'm not real sure what we're doing.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
we're doing it.
So we're doing it.
But Sloan knows.
What would you call this, first of all, what we're doing?
So we have a series of films that we call Yeti Presents, and they're usually stories about people. Very little emphasis on product, and we just like to tell stories. So this is going to be a portrait of the Robertson family, starting from the beginning and Phil doing what he was doing and kind of being revolutionary and starting Duckman, and then kind of all the way to where you guys are now and your connection with the land and everything like that. So we're really excited about
it. Do you release them? It's on your website? Is that where
they'll be on YouTube. We'll also do like a film tour probably for it. So.
Yeah, I got you.
So I have to confess, and you probably noticed, this has brought back memories of when we used to do this little TV show that people watched. And I'm like, because now every time I turn around, so yesterday they're like, "Hey, let's go down. We want to show you scouting." And so I did the little scout. Well, then this guy, Ben, he has two red lights. He's in another boat, and he starts like doing air traffic control. And I'm like, what is he wanting me to do? Because he was like, over. And so finally I turned the motor on. He's like, "Come get these red lights." Because I couldn't hear him because of the motor. So I put the
Can
I share this? I don't want to share
Your
secrets. Of
what. No.
So I get in the boat. I have the red light. And they're like, "Drive." Well, here's the funny part. I take off wide open. I can't see. And it's dark already on the lights. And they're like, hold. You know, keep going. And So anyway, we did all that, but when I got to the bank, they showed me what it looked like, and it looked like the movie I thought of was Blade Runner. It looked like some kind of futuristic guy going to hunt the what were they? You remember that movie?
Oh yeah, some kind of not human people, whatever. The
I thought you were
robots.
A big Blade Runner guy.
No, I mean I like the original.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like.
Robots.
That's what we're going for. Like Blade Runner is in the theme of this film. We want it to look like that.
Oh, boy. They're making this bigger out than I thought. Well, but I told Missy we're going to have to get some more posters or whatever.
I feel sorry for your crew, though, because I know the unashamed audience will be shocked. But when Jace gets on a film shoot like this, it takes about 6 hours for him then to be the new director of everything. I mean, he's lining up shots. Yeah. You do this, go here, go that.
I think so, I've done that the whole time.
He's done it the whole time, but it's been very helpful for us, too.
He is. He knows his stuff. I agree. I'm just saying.
What do you have, look, 30 years of experience shocked. With a camera in your face?
They had a guy filming. The intern was filmed. Can I share this? Yeah. I don't want to share too much of the details.
It's fine.
And they said, oh, he's an intern. He'll get it. He's outside the blind. Well, I shoot down a duck right toward him. And so I get out of the blind. I'm chasing this duck. But the duck stays in between me and him.
So you can't shoot
He's
him.
Filming it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, your life right now is in danger. Because legally, I have to take this duck out. But by doing so, I will take you out. So that's breaking another law. So I had to wait.
Well,
so,
is it really, though? I mean,
He's an intern.
He's an intern.
Turn the other way and cover up. So look, the duck turns right. And I said, I'm fixed to shoot this gun. And silence. I said, I will be shooting around you. And this innocent voice, where's he from? Where's the intern from?
Thibodaux, Louisiana.
Thibodaux, Louisiana. He went, do you have to?
That's the funniest thing that I've ever experienced in a film shoot.
So I shot the duck. And, of course, then he said, that was intense. You know, I was like, yeah, not every day do you have a gun discharging.
You were finishing off a cripple, right?
Yeah, I was, finishing off a cripple. By the law, and I got him, and he was safe. And I knew the distance away, but it was still scary if you're not used to people shooting shotguns in your general direction. And he was far enough away where I was like, this is safe, but it probably
From
sounded
time to
scary.
Time, there is a sphincter tightening moment. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That was one of those.
That was one of them.
So we've had
you see a man pointing a shotgun in close proximity to you, you know, a duck swimming, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Your line was, I was just sitting and listening, watching the thing unfold. You said, I see you.
Yeah.
You said, I see you. That means I know what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, thanks. Because I let him know, I see you. I'm going to shoot around you.
There's a certain amount of ricochets, the first one thing and another.
That's like on Avatar, that was like a love greeting or something. See you.
I just know that camera people are not used to hunting situations. And
that's right.
If you were standing right where he was, you would have said, go ahead. Because I know this is safe,
I would have been down low on the ground, no matter what you said, preferably a log close by.
It happens all the time. I was gathering the ducks, and I said, I'm outside the blind, but I was 80 yards away.
Yeah.
And feels like, oh, we see you. I saw two ducks come in their direction. I turned the other way, went down, and it was boom, 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 boom.
It's a different sound when you're on the other end of it.
Now that's when you're hearing them fall around.
Yeah, hey, we were shooting over you. I said, no, we're good.
I ran down a cripple Woody about an hour ago. No more than an hour.
The watch.
So
there's no watch.
The ducks fall.
That's for drama.
The ducks fall. The duck fell out there. So we didn't have a dog with us today. So I get out of the blind, and I'm moving through the brush as fast as I can, and it is thick. And so I could see up ahead of me, the duck would dive, and I'd move in, try to get a little closer. The duck would dive, but the brush is so thick, vines grabbing me. I just kept going. But finally, everything got quiet. No duck, nothing. I thought, well, old Woody slicked me on that one. So I just was easing back from where I came from out of the duck blind. The water was about knee deep, a little deeper. And I just happened to look over there. And the duck was just sitting there, right in that thick brush.
Oh, yeah.
He's playing possum.
Playing possum. So I just, boom, but it's loud in that, you know, just took the thing's head off.
Possum game over.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, look, I asked Sloan to be here, and, you know, we go back, I don't want to put a date on it. We go back. Well, the first event that we did together, it was me, you, and Si. That's where I met you.
Yep.
And I think we were in Richmond, Virginia, at a sporting goods store. And we had a nice turnout of people who liked the show. But I heard your story, and trust me, that's what formed our partnership. I mean, we work hard. We try to make a living. We've lived off the land. We understand business, Willie, probably way more than us. But really, it's about people. And so I asked you to be here. I was like, you need to share your story on the podcast. And because really, that is what life is about, is relationships. So tell us, because it's amazing to me that here you are, which I would think, you know, being the head of marketing, hunting for Yeti is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so when I asked you, I think I just said we were sitting at a parking lot. You had gotten us some lunch or whatever, because there was a lot of fans around, so we literally ate lunch in the parking lot. And I think I said, what's your story? And after you told it, I was like, whoa. So how would you share that? Just or and, you know, it reminded me of my dad. And so how do you wind up here? I mean, tell us about it.
Hang on a song. Let's take a break and go.
Yeah.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
I would say I ended up here by divine intervention. Yeah. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for God. I grew up in West Texas, middle class, upper middle class family. Dad's a dentist, mom's a dietitian. My parents got divorced when I was 11, and that definitely like shook my foundation quite a bit. But
that's a key age.
Yeah. I mean, I look at life. When I look at life, it's time stamped by pre-divorce, post-divorce, and I think that's common amongst children of divorced parents. But I don't think that's the reason that I ended up using drugs and alcohol. But anyways, no trauma, and I know that's rampant amongst drug addicts, and it's really, really sad. But
so when did that start? I mean,
I took my first pill when I was 14 years old, and I remember vividly that moment. It was an anti-anxiety pill. My friend was prescribed, and I remember that feeling of like I am comfortable in my own skin for the very first time. So much so that my dad came and picked me up from my friend's house, and I almost told him, Dad, like, I need a prescription for this because I feel so right in the world. And I hadn't ever felt that way in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was in trouble at that point. I didn't know I was a drug addict, but fast forward, you know, it leads into the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. I was doing cocaine in high school a lot, like so much so that when I went to college, I was like, I could never do cocaine again and I would be okay. I was tired of it. But I got into pain pills, which is so common. I think that we have a serious issue in this country with that. And
no doubt.
I mean, doctors are writing scripts left and right, and the big farm has their, you know, their pad in the pockets of everybody. And it's a bad deal.
Yeah. And you remember me telling you about our cousin who we lost last year?
It's been about two years now,
yeah. And it started with prescribed, you know, pills for anxiety, and he literally went down the trying to find a bigger.
Of course, fentanyl was the final nail.
Yeah,
you know, which is an end of life drug. And that's what it was designed for. So, and he ended his life literally just because he knew he was going to prison.
Yeah.
So how are you hiding all this, you know, from your family?
I'm one of those guys that is. I care about my what people think of me. And so I did well in high school. I graduated the top 6% of my class. I went to Auburn University. Did pretty well there my first few years. But
still doing drugs and...
Yeah, but not really bad. About my sophomore year of college, it got really bad. Everyday use. And then it was Oxycontin. And word kind of got around amongst my tight friends, because nobody I grew up with was okay with drugs and alcohol like that.
Yeah.
So I had a really small circle that was, and then the larger circle was not. So I hid it for a long time, and outwardly looking in, you probably wouldn't have known. Mm-hmm. But word got around amongst my friends, and I woke up in my apartment, and my dad and brother were there in Auburn, Alabama, and it was an intervention.
Okay.
And they said, you're either cut off or you're going to go to treatment, which that is like... To be able to afford to go to a treatment center is truly, like, it's amazing. If anybody has the opportunity, do it, because a lot of people don't. It's really difficult if you don't. So I agreed to go, but I didn't want to stop. You know, I thought that I just had a problem with pain pills, and I wasn't willing. They told me I had to quit everything, and I just wasn't willing at that point. And so my dad came to pick me up at the end of my 45 days, and he was inside talking to the doctors about anti-relapse medication and filling out paperwork. And I looked in the back seat, and he's got a briefcase. My grandmother had just had surgery, and he'd filled her pain pill prescription for her. And I look out in the back seat. I'm still inside the treatment center. I pick up the bottle of pills and get high before I even left.
Wow.
And it didn't even register to me. Like, I didn't realize. I still didn't realize, you know, how strong of a grasp this thing had on me. So fast forward, I'm back at college, and I'm off the wagon. I'm bad. And at that time, I think they had kind of changed OxyContin or tried to pull it off the market or something. And I was introduced to heroin for my first time. It was actually the girl that I kissed, my very first kiss, really? Shot me up with heroin for the first time. And it was off to the stupid races after that. It was bad.
So that just became more and more.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
When people get hooked on heroin, they usually wind up in the ground in jail.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a small fraction of the population that's alive after you try it. So I was at home for a summer and went over to my heroin dealer's house, which is in the ghetto of my hometown. Bad, bad place. And I did a shot of heroin in their house, and it was a bigger shot than I was used to, and I fell out on their kitchen floor. They drug me out to the street. I was lifeless, turning blue, and they called the hospital, 911, and the ambulance picked me up. Luckily, I was like three blocks from the hospital. Otherwise, I'd be dead. Yeah. And I woke up in the ICU with my family standing over me crying. And that was the first time that I saw, like, I was like, okay, not only am I killing myself, but I am killing my family just as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was my first moment where I was like, I got to get this under control. I got to change. And so I went to treatment, and wanted to get sober and was doing all the right things, but I got out and I was living in a sober house and just things didn't feel right. You know, they say sobriety is like a jacket. You got to try it on several times. And I couldn't find a job and I just felt useless. And instead of talking to somebody about it, I ended up getting high. I got kicked out of the house. Ended up back in school, just not doing well. Using a lot of drugs, like really, really scary high numbers. I was like, I got to get out of Auburn. I got to make a change because I'm dying. I knew I was dying. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that ultimately brought me to my knees, like, I think everybody has to hit a level of pain before it kicks them into action. And this thing takes action. Mm-hmm. Was I felt all alone, like entirely alone. No friends. Nobody wanted to hang out with me. I'd stolen from people. I lied to everybody. Like I felt like I was on an island alone. Yeah. And that's what brought me to my knees ultimately.
Yeah.
And so I went to treatment for the third summer in a row. I always joke that I was honor camper three summers in a row, rehab, same rehab place. Cause if you're not laughing about it, you know, it's just,
yeah.
But
I mean, it's not funny, but I think you have to laugh. Cause it's like, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. It just shows the insanity of this thing. And I believe that addiction is a disease. It's in the DCIM, which is basically the encyclopedia of medicine. But it's the only disease that tricks you into believing that you don't have it. You know, it's very mental.
Yeah.
And if you're an addict or an alcoholic, you don't have a choice to say no. Like, you are just going to do it if it's in front of you.
Yeah, at some point it just takes over.
Yeah. And so they sent me out to Colorado after that last stint in treatment. And I was like, you tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. You know, at that point I would do anything to stay sober. And I still will. So I got, it was a, it's a, like a peer driven treatment center, and it's all about reintroducing you to life and showing you that you can have fun. Because in my mind, I'd always thought, like, man, I'm doomed with this thing. I can't have fun anymore. My real life is boring. Yeah, I'm going to be making coffee for my 12-step meeting for the rest of my life, and that's going to be it, you know. But I got in with a really good crew, and we started fishing all the time and hunting all the time on public land in Colorado, and I just fell in love with the outdoors. And I grew up hunting and fishing, but it meant more to me at that point. It was kind of my escape. It was my church. It was my healing. It was my place of peace. It was my connection to God. That's how I see God. You know, I may have a different view of God than you guys do, but that's where I see him, and that's where I visit him.
Yeah. Well, it was reminding me of the story that happened to me, because, you know, Phil fell off the wagon.
Yeah.
He's written several books about it. And I didn't really believe in God, and you know, had issues, even though we were small kids, though. But when I saw my dad's transformation, you know, part of his new life was taking his kids hunting. Because what's weird to me is when you said that about being alone, you know, Phil wound up in the same place. He was alone, estranged from his family, which was a major draw, which opened his heart, you know, to hearing about Jesus. But I discovered that same thought in the outdoors, because I was like, well, I wonder who made this. It just made me look at it from a different perspective, as is there something out here. But that's why when you told that story, I was like, even though it's a different paths, different stories, we got outdoors of all places and found some peace.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was interesting was when you said that the tipping point was the lonely place you were. And then when you started finding a pathway with community, because you mentioned these peers, and I think that's so important, because I think obviously suicide is a, you know, the numbers are up so much for just what you described, because that's when you're at the crossroads. You really had a choice about, am I going to end this, you know, or just do the drugs into death? Or am I going to try to seek out some way out of this place? And it takes community to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
Community, I mean, it has to happen.
But I'll also say a 12-step program is key. No way. I mean, the way they break it down is, if you're a drug addict, you have a spiritual void. You were born with basically a hole.
Correct.
And your solution is drugs. And for a long time, it works. Until it doesn't, and then and so the whole 12-step
program. Tell somebody's calling 911, saying we got a blue guy out there on the sidewalk.
Yeah. But the whole concept of the 12-step program is clear the wreckage of your past, trust in God, and once you start handling all those fears and resentments and everything like that that blocks you from the sunlight of the Spirit, you take care of that. You right your wrongs. You let God in, and
he fills the void,
and that feeling of alone,
yeah,
it vanishes,
yeah,
it's gone,
right?
You know, and then you've got a good community, and you never feel alone.
We have a really strong CR program here. Our church, we have probably about 14 houses here, and so people come. They're sort of like what you described in Colorado. We have that here in West Monroe. And that's what I notice about these guys. And, you know, not everybody makes it. Obviously, there's people that go back. But the ones that do, it's that bond they make with one another. And then I watch how they deal with that, with each other. And then I watch these leaders emerge out of those that are just, I mean, they're gifted to be able to help other people. And so I watch it all the time here. And so I see that. And so your story is so descriptive of that. And I'm so glad that there are places and people that have committed themselves to provide a pathway for you and a lot of other people like you.
And that's the whole thing, too, is how you continue this on is working with other addicts and alcoholics.
Right.
And that was when I was doing my moral inventory and realized that I was fear-based and everything went back to being scared of being alone.
Right.
That was like a big moment. But then when I saw the lights come on for another alcoholic and drug addict, that's when it was like, I'm on fire.
That's why I think the best therapy is trying to help other people. And, you know, I asked you to come on, and you kind of hesitated for a second, said, yeah, I'll do it. And it's not like you go around. I mean, we described your job and share this, but you said, you know, if I can help anybody not go down that road, I'll do it. And So I just want to thank you for your courage. I know it's not easy. Yeah, he told me something. Look, man, I made some really bad decisions. I was hooked on heroin, and I was like, I don't know. We've had some.
Well, I can promise you this, Sloan. We have a large audience, and I can guarantee you helped someone today.
I hope so.
Yeah, we'll hear back that you helped someone. So
share the stories. I love hearing them.
I always say, don't be stingy with the victories of God, and you're a victory of God.
I'd like to add, on the way out, over with old Sloan there, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law, every little command. The commandments: do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet. Whatever other commandments there may be are summed up in this one rule: love your neighbor as yourself. You were referring to it as community. Mm-hmm. Love does no harm to its neighbor.
Yeah.
It's the hardest lesson for human beings to learn.
It is.
They get so into themselves, and they just are worried about their next high. They don't give a flip about anybody on their right or left.
Or even themselves.
There's no love. There's no love in them.
Yeah,
and you say, but somehow or another, when you sit down and start listening to people and learning to trust people, you begin to get on your feet. And therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. In other words, instead of getting up saying, I got to make sure I don't kill anybody today. I got to make sure I don't steal somebody today. I have to make sure that I don't commit sexual immorality with anybody today. If you just love your neighbor,
those things
will just go away.
Yeah. That's good. Valid point. Well, thanks for being here, Sloan.
Thanks, Sloan. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate
Let's take
it.
A break. So we're always looking for ways to save money. Jace, would you like to put an extra $961 in your pocket this year?
Well, possibly.
It doesn't involve playing cards. It's about saving money on car insurance. So there's one of our sponsors, Gabby Insurance, is what's called, G-A-B-I. And basically, they go out and look and get quotes from you to save you money on your insurance, which is really good. So, and on average, they save a person $961.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty good. And a lot of people just spending money they don't have to.
Seemed like they'd just round it up.
Yeah. Well, that lets you know it's true because they would have just said $1,000.
Yeah.
So here's what you want to do if you want to check this out and save yourself some money. If you're overpaying on your car or your home insurance, they can, and it's free to check these guys out. So you go to Gabby.com. That's GABI.com/unashamed. That's Gabby.com/unashamed. And find out if you can save yourself a few dollars, maybe $961.
Well, it was interesting. You know, they wanted us to film this movie that he described. I didn't really want to do it, but I thought, well, they've been good to us. We've had a history with them. And
we've been with them
for a few years.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Because that the worst commercial, which turned out to be great because it was so bad. It was one of those, the one old commercial from 2012.
But, you know, it's always this deal about, it's not about money, or it's like, you know, we're going to do this, make a film and in your honor. And I'm like, well, what exactly do we get out of this? And they're like, oh, you know, the notoriety. So what's interesting?
Last time I checked, we were pretty
well. I saw one of the films they did, and I thought, this is pretty good. So
I still haven't watched one of those. Jay was telling me how
they're good. Yeah. They're good. They tell stories about people in life and the outdoors. But what the turnaround was for him is when I was like, hey, you need to come. Be on the podcast and share your story. Well, he thought I was kidding, you know. He's like, yeah.
Well, I sent you a text, and I was like, can we have the Yeti guy? I didn't even remember his name at that time. Yeah. I said, can we have the Yeti guy on the podcast? Because I thought it'd be too, because we're doing the podcast. I knew we were going to talk about what y'all were doing this.
And he said, well, you know, I don't like go around and tour. I was like, what's that going to do with this thing? I was like, and he's like, well, I mean, you know, I said, have you ever shared your story before? He's like, yeah, many times. I was like, well, how'd it go? He said, it went well. I was like, well, come for the notoriety of it.
You put it back on him.
And I said, you know, seriously, I was like, It's an epidemic in our world, this drug. There are people.
Well, and I didn't know you said, I was just thinking we were going to talk about what, you know, the project, and you said, well, he's got a story. So then I got excited, but I didn't know his story until he just told it. But what I love about it is it's obviously we have a large audience. I know there's people in our audience that are probably either are struggling or have struggled with what
I've heard his story.
Thousands.
Exactly.
Well, but here's what I...
And we can't always speak to it out of our own experiences. And we talk about some lifestyle stuff, but obviously what he described was being at the point of death multiple times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just hard for us to imagine what that's like.
Well, if you're listening to this and you're like, because I appreciate y'all, you know, allowing me to do this, but I just thought to myself, a lot of times, you know, we talk about Jesus. That's what we're all about. Forgiveness, hope, redemption, the resurrection, the forever family, all these principles that you have in Jesus. But a lot of times people have difficulty in life thinking, well, I can never go get a real job.
Yep.
They're like, okay, I can be forgiven, but they've made so many mistakes. I mean, this guy was shooting up heroin for years. You just never would think that he would rise to be an important executive in a multi-billion-dollar company.
Right.
And so I just thought it was an interesting angle, which is what my thinking was. Right. I was like, here's a guy that when I said, what's your story, the last thing, because I've been around these types of guys for the last 40 years, but there was something about him that drew me to him.
Tell him what you noticed and why you asked him the question. Yeah,
we said this after he left, because they're actually going to film.
We're still filming.
Having a meal together, so he's like, hey, you know, I hope that went well, but I need to go. He did have a watch film. But when I met him the first time, so Si and I meet him in Richmond, and he said, we're going to go to a restaurant and get to know each other before we do the event the next day. Well, we go to the restaurant, and I've told y'all many times, you know, I don't have a problem with drunkenness. I've never been drunk in my life. I have a lot of problems, just like everybody else. I'm a sinner. That is not one of them. Right. I waited till I was 30 before I ever even tasted alcohol outside of NyQuil, because some people say you can't have a drop of alcohol. You know, the wine that Jesus turned from water.
It wasn't really wine.
It wasn't fermented. And I'm like, have you ever drank NyQuil? And they're like, uh-oh. There's more.
So there's more alcohol in
NyQuil. I was just, you know, making that point. But we went to the restaurant, and they had all their team, and there were people, and there were guests, and it was me and Si. And there were two people that did not have a drink at the table.
Well, three if Si was there.
Well, Si was drinking his tea, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't count Si because what that tea is not. I'm not sure what's in there. But
it could be laced with something. I never thought about that.
It's non-alcohol. That's for sure.
Well, I was kidding.
We're just good.
But I wasn't counting Si, so I guess there was three.
There were three.
Because Si had his little.
Well, cup. I didn't want to say that, and then somebody said, "Oh, what about Uncle Si?" Was
he don't. He wasn't drinking either. But so me, but at the, and Si was kind of at the.
He was down there telling tales. Yeah,
he wasn't even involved, but Si wasn't drinking. So me and this guy. Now, I didn't drink because when I go to events like that, even though I feel I am free to have a drink, I don't do it because when I gather in those places, if someone who has a problem with it is there, I want them to have a buddy. Because I don't have a problem with it. I don't really like the taste of alcohol. I will drink an occasional glass of wine or, you know, two beers a year. And I think I'm free to do so. But in those moments, and I just noticed that he was drinking water and tea. And so that's why when I got in the vehicle, I said, what's your story? Because I just thought that was unusual. And boy, he told me what he just shared. He showed a shorter version of it, and I thought, wow! I just thought, what an interesting thing to openly share. And he's a young guy.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how old he is, but I thought, man, he did something. There was a transformation happen, which was hard enough, and now he's worked his tail off, and he's climbed up the ladder at this this huge company. I thought, what an impressive testimony.
The Apostle Paul.
Hang on, Dad. Let's take a break before you read that.
He said, first to those in Damascus, Acts 26:20, if you've followed along, then to those in Jerusalem and in all Judea and to the Gentiles also. He's saying, here's what I tell everybody. I preach that they should repent. And you just heard a story of a guy who repented.
Yep.
I preach that they should repent and turn to God. He did. And prove their repentance by their deeds, which he is doing. Paul said, this is why the Jews seized me in the temple courts and tried to kill me. They didn't go this repentance thing and because of Jesus, you know, you prove your repentance.
Right.
You prove that you're now a changed person from the heart.
Right.
Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. You just heard a guy saying for a long time what was coming out of his heart and what he was saying and what he was doing. It didn't jihad. He mentioned having a hole.
Yep.
His sinful nature, just
yeah.
The evil one, because of his sins,
right.
The evil one moved in and took him captive to do his will. And only the truth about Jesus sets you free from the trap.
Right.
So,
yeah. Well,
it's not like I had a hole. That's like old Johnny Ringo, you know, old Doc Holliday said he's got a big hole in his heart and he never can fill it enough with hatred.
And he said, well, why does he do it? And he said, well, no, what's he mad at? And he's like, for being born.
Being born.
But
that might have been a little scary.
Yeah, he said, what's he after? He said, revenge. He said, why? Revenge for what? And he said, for being born.
Yeah, that was a really well-written movie.
Let me just tell you this. Don't get your theology from an old Western.
Yeah.
But it was interesting.
But I've heard that the way he describes that is I've seen it in so many different, I mean, his was drugs. I mean, I just sat down with a man yesterday and, you know, his wife's been having an affair and she's being driven in this way he describes, like a hole in her that it can't be filled. And so she's looking at all these other ways. And you described it. It's the sinful nature, the flesh, and the Bible talks about a lot of different ways. But it does feel that way because they keep trying to put something in to find some peace, to find whatever, like he said, to find life.
And even though he may use different tactics and different semantics, and, you know, he views it as a disease. And look, you know, and I usually, when I'm talking to people, you know, I zero in on choices that were made, and that's how we view it. But I'm like, anything you can do,
that's right,
to stop doing that. Because how many times have we gone to funerals and prisons where they're in a position where they can't even hear about Jesus because they're so far down. They've lost, like, you know, Ephesians says they've lost sensitivity.
Yeah, what's the word, Al? Because they're Yetis doing all these with different groups, and with us it's the outdoor, the tied to the land, the backwater, the fishing, the hunting, and we're just
common theme in their movies.
It's almost when you're out in the great outdoors like we were this morning in the duck blind. And you're watching the ducks fly by. You see the sun start peeking above and it's quiet. There's no one there. There's no belligerent. There's no profanity. There's no argument. And we're all sitting there, and it's medicinal.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. It's what's the word for that? It's
it's
a lifestyle that is good for the soul.
Well, it's peaceful.
It's peaceful.
It's peaceful. I mean, and that's what you need. I mean, like when you're seeking something. Peace, you know, some peace in your life.
I'm looking at various grasses and bushes and trees and how they're growing and what they're doing. And we planted these 5 years.
Seeing the power of God through the details, and even though you may not acknowledge it, you're experiencing it, the wonders of God.
I'm telling you.
I mean, look, I want to share this.
And there's no, what's the word? There's no interaction. That people would say we're a little bit standoffish, kind of like a retreat, but basically
aloof.
Aloof, they got these words.
I'm not sure.
Look,
we're
out here in the woods, and people, if they saw how much time we spent there, they would be shocked.
Well, we read this verse before, Romans 1:20. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen,
yep,
being understood from what has been made.
That's me.
I think that's it. I think the idea, Jason's right. When God says, look, this is a revelation, the word of God, that's one way he reveals himself. But the first way is just look around. I mean, what you see. And
some of the most beautiful sights you've ever seen. We saw it this morning. Green-winged teal coming down from the heavens. Just you look up, and I mean, they're so fast. They're flying 60, 70, 80 miles an hour coming out of the sky. And the sound they make when they're doing that, well, it's jaw-dropping.
Well, tell me,
we're looking at it like, whoa.
Tell me y'all kill some.
It's green-winged teal.
Well, shoot. That's my favorite duck, and it's right around my birthday.
We always say, if we were down there, I'll tell you what.
Well, I went and scouted yesterday when I had the red lights and I was going to save the futuristic world in a boat. There were no ducks there. So the one place I saw a few, I said, let's go there. But what happens in duck season is sometimes they come without warning, with no weather. It was cloudy. It was a little cool.
A little cool and a little windy.
And you're surprised to see how many. And they just appear.
They just appear. And it was green winged teal. Now, having said that,
you'll be there tomorrow.
We shot. Oh yeah, we're going to the teal hole tomorrow, buddy. I was gathering up teal decoys.
We're hiding in the bushes, and that's why our faces are black. We didn't have time to come in. I mean, we just drove up out there, ran back here. I ran to the house, forgot my Bible, coming along here. To me, that's the things I deal with. Where's my Bible? I said, I got to have my Bible some more. They got a podcast down there. So these folks that are watching this, I bet, they really get together and have discussions on what they're going to say. And look, Jesus, number one, pretty well, if we just come in, tell you that, and walk out the door, that ought to cover it.
So let's take one last break. Yeah, it's funny. We were having when Sloan, we were sitting there talking and getting ready to start the podcast. And of course, they're like, you have meetings and pre-production, and it kind of feels like the show, right? As well as the And then Jason's like, well, this is the pre-production talk right here. When we basically said, here's what we're going to do.
One of my best buddies in school, old Bill Conley, yesterday, we would double date with Bill and Jeannie, and they eventually married, just like me and y'all's mama. So that's what we were doing. We were dating around. He had a little old Falcon car. And we'd go out, and get gas out of the oil field. There's a certain kind of gas you put in there, casing head, we call it. But we'd put it in there, where we'd go a few more miles. But we just basically rode around every once in a while.
Did they not have gas stations?
How many times did you run out of gas?
And yesterday, a lot of times. Yesterday, he passed on.
Oh, really?
Yep, coronavirus. So it got him.
Yeah.
And I think Jeannie's got it too, but he succumbed to it, which brings me to my point. I handed him, he was a running back at North Kettle where I went to high school, and I handed him the ball a many times, threw him a many a touchdown pass, young bucks. But when we talk about Jesus and alleviating the fear of physical death, mm-hmm. It just makes you think. I haven't kept up with him through the years, right. I don't know exactly, but he always was a good man. I know that. Yeah. So
it's a reminder of how real it is, right?
How real
it
is.
I want to share this one other story.
He's my age, so I'm 74, and I'm still running wood ducks down through the brush this morning,
Bill, thinking, you actually made one of the top three shots of the year today, and I thought for 74, there was a wood duck that came whistling with the wind.
Ooh.
I would say, I don't want to embellish, I will say that duck was traveling at least 50 miles an hour, maybe 60. He was on a downhill sail.
Left to right.
It was a blur. And somebody said, cut him. And by the time they said, cut him, the duck, perfect headshot, fell over here. He was flying so fast that he bounced off the water. He didn't feel it because the last thing that went through his head was the bullets that you fired.
And I knew as I put a shell, I didn't say a word, see?
Yeah.
You got them young bucks. Yeah. I just put a shell in my gun, set my gun back up there, and I waited and all of them. I'll tell you one thing.
That was a shot.
I didn't want any of him.
That's the difference in me and where I'm at, Dad. I never would have even picked my gun up. So I don't know.
It was a wonderful shot. But I was going to share this another member of their crew.
Just between me and you, why waste three shells?
That's my point. It's not that it's cost me any money, but it would hurt my pride to watch me miss three times. So.
I was going to share this story because we were going to talk about the Great Commission when Jesus said...
Well, we will next time.
We will. But as a preview, I noticed something it was a business meeting. I noticed that the guy wasn't drinking, and I asked him. I had a spiritual conversation. And when you start talking about the Great Commission, I think these people think you got to have some kind of program or project. But Jesus went around and he talked to people. I'm trying to be like Jesus. So... one of their cameramen, the lead cinematographer of this event that they're doing, he rode in my rig the first day. So we got in. I was like, because he sounded like he was from the South. Where are you from? He's from Louisiana. And I said, you married? Because he looked older. And he's like, well, I got a girlfriend. Been dating her for 5 years. Well, when he said that, he said that as I was backing out. And his buddy said, and boy, she is top notch. So I said, 5 years? I mean, how old are you? And he told me, I can't remember. I think it was 28, 29, something like that. I said, what seems to be the holdup? And he said, what do you mean? I said, 5 years?
And you're almost 30.
I said, look, I'm pretty good at reading people. He said, well, you just met me. I said, yeah, and I'm making a read right here. You've got commitment issues. The fella, if she wasn't a great woman... he wouldn't have said top knot. He immediately responded. That's him saying, what seems to be the holdup? I says, here's what you need to do. You need to have one night of staring at the ceiling before you go to bed. You're going to be here for 3 days. You think about all the great things that you love about her. And I said, you said, how do I know? I know you're an artist. You need to drop that camera and experience the magic. He was just looking at me, just stark fear all over his face. So I told Missy this story, and she got teary-eyed. She's like, babe, that was beautiful. I was like, well, I wasn't doing it to be beautiful. I was trying to help him along.
Light a fire.
So I share that to say this. On day three, he was filming me scouting. He was asking me questions, So after we finished, he said, I haven't stopped thinking about what you told me. He's like, I think I need to do that. I said, oh, I know you do. I said, and here's why. And I gave him two illustrations because I didn't know what he thought about Jesus, church, or anything like that. We hadn't even got to that. I said, the first illustration, I said, you ever seen that movie, Jerry Maguire? I was like, yeah. I said, you need to have that moment. You've probably not seen that movie, Phil. But at the end, watch it on TV. I never heard of it. I think it's rated R, but I watched it on TV. Yeah. They cleaned it up.
Yeah.
So he walked in, and his girlfriend was like having a women's party.
She was actually his wife because they had gotten married.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember all the details.
But he didn't love her, right?
Yeah, and they had some problems, whatever. I wasn't paying attention till the end. So, look, it was a romantic movie. I watched it with my wife. I was not interested. But at the end, I thought, no, this is good.
Yeah, it was good.
He came in. She was talking to all these women, and he kind of had a look. Well, like, if this is where it has to go down, I'm doing this. And so
all these women are mad at him because he dumped her.
He basically gave her a speech, which is what I told him. I said, you need to go home and give the Jerry Maguire speech, which is this. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I don't know if we're going to afford it. Things are going to change. I use that little illustration. There may be ups and downs, but guess what? I want to do it together with you. Will you marry me? I said, that's what I would go with. I said, and the second thing I want to share, I said, in Ephesians chapter 5, I said, that's a book in the Bible. He said, yeah, I know. So I thought, okay, well, he's read.
He does know that.
I said, when he went through the roles of marriage, and husbands, wives, he said, yeah, I've read it. I said, well, his point was, I'm talking about being married to Jesus. I said, the same thing happens. And so I share Jesus. I said, when you hear that, now you can think about, should I do this or how many, what do other groups think about it? I said, but when you fall in love with Jesus at some point, you got to put down all the excuses and say, I'm in. I said, that was his point. And then I quoted 1 Corinthians 13, and he said, that was beautiful. I said,
go. That's the second time
I
you
said,
heard that.
Go and do it.
Good advice.
So I wanted to share that story because he was a part of the crew, but it was not like I invited him to church. Now, I went out on a limb and said, 5 years. But I was right, you know. It was the right read. So have conversations, get to know people, and find clever ways to get to Jesus.
Conversations full of grace and seasoned with salt. That's what he said. That's what you did. It's good stuff.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.